So you can imagine how wonderful it was for us to be there. This crowd, a beautiful, diverse crowd, people of color, transgender people, gay people, straight people, taming humanity, facing that. What there is to do is to face us and our own negativity so that we do not bring that into the world. So, finally, I think I'm almost on time. Tonight, Joanne Gaga, who has now become one of our veteran Catholic teachers, and Jenny Goldman, who will be teaching for the first time, will be teaching a lecture on cooperation, communication, and union. They're going to help us see how our fear of rejection and our anxiety causes us to either withdraw from love or to fake love. Withdraw from love or fake love. And both of those human patterns cut us off from that beautiful love that is within us. Our new teacher tonight is Denny Goldring. She's a pathwork teacher. She's in a helpership training program. She's a psychotherapist in private practice. She teaches mindfulness. And she is the mother of two socially active young adults. So let's give Denny and Joe a hand.
Is that aspect of ourselves that is judgmental, self-seeking, narcissistic, envious, gossipy, all those lovely, ugly things we like to get into.
Thank you, Pam. And each one of us has a lower self. We all have these different aspects, and often we want to hide them from ourselves and from others. So, who would like to light the mask candle? Thank you, Judy.
Mm-hmm. mask is who we would like others to see us as. And who we would really like to be. we would like to be that too. And sometimes we actually think we are. But it's all a pretext. And makes us uncomfortable because we know it's not really who we are. So for myself, I like to be seen as being really capable and competent and on top of things and organized. And I am, you know, some of those, but not as much as I would like to be seen as being. Thank you, Jean.
And then, of course, we all have a higher self. And who would like to come up and light the higher self candle? Anybody? Oh, Billy wants to.
Thank you, Billy.
The higher self is our deepest intuition, our most loving, naturally loving, connected to others self, and it's also the presence of the divine within and without.
Thank you, Billy.
So we're going to start our lecture with a meditation, and this meditation is not going to be a structured meditation. It's going to be a meditation just to help us all arrive. We have all had busy days, and so we're going to sit, turn toward ourselves, connect with our breath, and just take a few moments to arrive together. Maybe setting the intention to allow the lecture to touch us, to work through us, to be open to the lecture and whatever it has to offer each one of us. So Joanne's going to put the music on. It'll be for just about 3 minutes. And you can put your feet on the ground if you would like to, if that's comfortable. Turn toward yourself. Connect with your breath. coming back into the room with everyone. I just want to say, as we were sitting in meditation, like, I looked around and people were just sitting there quietly with themselves, and it was beautiful. It made me really excited to be here, and I'm still really nervous, but it was just so beautiful. Like, here we all are interested in this work. So I hope that we'll be able to teach it well for all of you. So our lecture is Cooperation, Communication, Union. And at the very beginning of the lecture, it starts by saying,
the highest, the most desirable state in the whole plan of evolution is union.
So that's what the lecture starts with. But pretty immediately, the lecture then says, yes, but this union actually doesn't exist here on Earth. We may get a little glimpse, a momentary awareness of it, but actually it doesn't exist here on this plane. So the guide says, and I quote, "There's no point in my discussing it. You could not possibly comprehend." So, and then the lecture says, "There isn't even, your language can't even describe it." So, actually, this lecture doesn't really talk about union. So, what are we going to talk about? So we have left cooperation, communication. And these are the two preliminary stages toward union. And they do exist here on Earth. We have cooperation, which is the lower level, and we have communication, which is the higher level. And we need cooperation and communication. I'm just going to wait for a second. So we need cooperation and I'm just going to wait until we get a second. That's okay.
Chair over here also.
Cooperation and communication. And cooperation is the lower level, and communication is the higher level. And we need cooperation and communication in order to get our basic needs met. We need cooperation and communication in order to get food, water, drink, shelter. Thank you, Billy. In order to get those needs met. And in fact, the better we cooperate and the better we communicate, the better we can get these material needs met. But then, once again, the guide says, but this is so obvious that we're not going to discuss this. So we're not going to discuss getting our material needs met, and we're not going to be discussing union. So what are we going to be discussing? Well, the guide says, we do need these cooperation and communication to get our material needs met, but we also need it to get our spiritual, mental, and emotional needs met. And the lecture tells us that the world would be a very different place if we were really able to comprehend this, that we are dependent on cooperation and communication to also get our spiritual, mental, and emotional needs met. So then the guide says, all right, but actually, cooperation is just a superficial form of communication, so we're not going to discuss that either. Now, we have what the lecture actually really teaches about, which is communication. So tonight, Joanne is going to teach the bulk of the lecture, which is primarily about communication, while keeping in mind that cooperation and communication are actually the stages that we experience here on Earth that lead to union. But before Joanne teaches the rest of the lecture, I'm going to introduce just one basic concept, which is
There he is in man's soul, a center out of which the forces flow or to which he responds. So what does this mean? Okay, so the lecture says that we each have a soul center. And from our soul center, forces flow out and are received by another's soul center. And what the lecture then tells us is that that is how communication actually takes place. We may think that the way we talk, our body language, our gestures, our tone, right? We may think that this is how we're communicating, but actually the way that we communicate are that these forces flow out of our soul centers and are received by another soul center. And in fact, when we are in harmony, then our communication reflects this. However, if we're not in harmony for whatever reason, then the lecture says our forces become twisted, broken, and distorted, and communication cannot take place. And so, until we're able to restore ourselves to harmony, communication can't really take place, which then delays the path to union. And we may not recognize that we are not in harmony. We may actually aren't in harmony in the way that we're communicating or the way that we are. And we may fool ourselves into thinking we're in harmony. But actually, whether or not we know that we're not in harmony, our soul forces will reflect this. So in spite of what we might think is going on with us, what is truly going on with us will be reflected in the quality of these forces that flow from our soul center to someone else's soul center. Did that make sense to people?
Yeah, great.
And now, Joanne is going to talk about some of the communication styles that we experience.
So, I'm actually going to have to plug this in. So you're looking at a slide that used the same picture. It basically is talking about it. I feel like I'm standing right in front of it, but you can see it.
Yeah. You're standing in front of the projector. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, I can see that. I can sit. I can go away.
Can you use the podium?
No. Can't reach. So, I might
be able to
take off the plug. There we go.
Bring the map and get off.
So, all right, now we're better, maybe.
Okay. Where did
my hat? No, I have a.
Oh, you got to my hat.
Yeah.
No. Okay, so we're basically, I'm going to give you a little bit more explanation, but I'm going to read the quote. What I did is I pulled pertinent quotes out, the way the guide wrote it. When I have dot, dot, dot in there, there may be more of the quote that I took out, just for the purposes of being clear tonight. So the guide says, if you are over-eager or over-anxious, if your desire for communication is exaggerated into a craving, the soul forces will automatically become harsh, pointed, and rigid. And we'll talk a little bit more about what the heck all that means. Their movement will be sudden, and their impact on the other person's soul center, from which he or she in turn responds, often quite unconsciously, will be too strong. So what we're really talking about here is when we have a reason why we want to get something from someone else that we do not have within ourselves. So, if Kathy McAllister, when I first met her, I had her up on a little pedestal because she was known to my family, and I was a therapist because we all go to therapy in my family. And when I first met her, I immediately thought, I'm probably too lesser than she. You know, I wasn't in a transformation program at the time. Now I don't think that. But so when I received her, I wasn't emanating this correct, nice, flowing communication. I was having ideas in my brain, and I wanted her approval. I wanted her to think I was my sister's sister. I was somebody great. She didn't even know me. But it was already walking in the room with a preconceived notion that I needed something from her in order for me to feel better, for me to be okay. So this is where this over-anxious, over-eager, that's commented on over and over in the lecture, this is what they're talking about, or what the guide is talking about. And anytime we're relying on something outside ourselves to tell us who we are or what we are, or that we're okay, that's really not where it is. Because that's very wrong most of the time. But this is the way we're going to be communicating. The inner work of self-search, to look at what is it that causes you to want to communicate, or that very idea. Later, Denny has a great, great story that really demonstrates this, I think, really well. But oftentimes you know you are not aware of this. You don't know this stuff is emanating from yourself. I mean, I think, as Denny pointed out, the nonverbal communications, the paraverbal communications, we think we're saying what we need to say. But in truth and reality, people are feeling something from us, whether we think they are or they're not, and it's probably as clear as what we are saying. So it's just important to know it's there. The guide actually says things like, if you believe you are unlovable and you see someone that you have an attraction to, what happens? If you don't believe you have anything that someone, but you need now this person to tell you you're lovable. So it's this constant, if you will, outside yourself need to define who you are, which is very normal, but at the same time, this is part of the reason why we don't communicate well the way we want to. And all of us are looking for a little bit of love, right? So this is one of the basic concepts of the whole law of communication. And it's about this balance. The whole universe is based on balance. And whenever balance is upset, the universal forces work toward reestablishing it. So what this basically means is my sort of half, you know, creative, terribly artistic picture that I put. I have the one figure on the side showing that this person's coming at this other person with raggedy, aggressive, possibly over-anxious, over-exaggerated communication. And what is going to soon happen is an attempt to get back to balance, the right-hand side one. And how does that actually happen? It happens because if I come at you very aggressively, next thing you know is you're pulling away. So that's going to happen every single time. And that is what that universal law is basically saying, is we'll always come back to balance. So it doesn't matter if it's not exactly balance coming out of me, as I'm too aggressive to you, you're withdrawing. And that is just going to happen, pretty much by law. Pretty much every time. So if you understand the concept of balance, then you kind of get that if I'm really feeling like, Deb, I'm coming at you too much, and you're withdrawing, uh-oh, now I feel rejected. But see, that was the law. That was the normal thing that was going to happen when I was coming at someone with guns loaded, you know, like, I want you to like me. And I need your approval in order for me to be okay. So if I don't repeat that enough, I can't even begin to say, it's repeated a lot in this lecture, but it's very, very important. And you would see that you would no longer interpret, if you understood that law, you would no longer interpret that withdrawal as rejection. You'd know, frankly, that's not really rejection. We're just kind of living out this law of communication. I need to get my stuff together so that I don't need that from someone outside myself. This balance is often very painful. People don't realize that what they've done, because this, too bad, you know, we don't have colored lights. Some people can see those things. So those of you that can see those things, maybe you can see those things, I don't know. But if we could see our emanations coming out of our body, we'd see these raggedy, rigid, and coarse emanations coming out of our body. We would be able to see that. But in this picture, basically we're saying, for instance, the effect of an aggressive communication must be that the other soul withdraws and seem to reject the overeager attempt at communication. again, back to the point that, now this picture is interesting because the guy goes on a little bit to say sometimes sort of strong communications are considered a positive thing. And they can be. But it's about where your rationale is, where your head is, what you're needing from someone else. And so if it's that you're grabbing and you're wanting either approval or something from this other person, then any kind of aggressive communication like that is not going to work in your favor to the way you want it to be. Again, we're all in this unconscious belief that we must have love, we must have affection, we must have attention. And not necessarily so if you are, it's not must-have. You might like to have, but it's not a must-have. And so we know that this happens. It's also said that the point in this part of the lecture was about the, this actually can go to the point of repulsion, so that the other person, if you've come at them so strongly, they're really actually repulsed by you. Well, that's not going to do much for your self-esteem. It's already screwed up, you know. So if you think about this, getting this concept under your belt is going to make life a little bit easier because you're going to understand people are not just sick with you. You're being too aggressive with the way you want from this person. We're going to do an exercise a little bit later, shortly. Denny's going to run that and kind of help you see a little bit maybe of where you can identify in yourself where some of this is landing. Actually,
questions. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I was going to say, I'm assuming that what you're saying also applies to, I mean, she's not looking for love from this guy. She's trying to control him or something, I would assume, because she's yelling at him.
Right. So this is, I use an extreme, but it's really any variation on how aggressive a person is coming across. I know that we have many, I have a few other examples, we are going to get examples from you, but Denny's going to run this next, she's going to walk you through this instruction, and we have a handout, right? This is the handout one?
No, this is not the handout.
Okay, good.
I believe you when you said you weren't coming back.
Oh, she didn't mean it.
I don't know, they didn't like
papers. Oh, dear. Oh, dear. You want to use this?
No.
Okay, well,
oh.
We choreographed this to the
T. I found it. Okay. All right. So, is that okay?
Yes.
I don't think it's working.
Yeah, but it's not. Sorry. Go ahead.
Let's keep him busy.
Okay.
Better.
Thanks, Billy. Billy, actually, no, I'm just kidding. okay. Woo. So, Billy. All right. So we are going to do two different exercises tonight. The first one is going to be pretty short, and then the second one will be at the end, and it's going to have different stages of work. But the first exercise, we're just going to be getting in touch with these different forms of communication within ourselves, the over-anxious, over-eager, and the withdrawal and repulsion. And first, what I'm going to do before I give the instructions is I am going to give you an example from my own life of this kind of over-eager withdrawal situation. And there we go. Now I can't see better. Okay. So the example from my own life has to do with my best friend, and some of you have met her. Her name is Joan. And we've been friends for 30 years, and she lives in Colorado. And so the way that we communicate is that we talk on the phone. And one time, about 2 years ago, there was a period of time where we were not communicating as often as we usually do. And and she just wasn't calling as much, we weren't talking as much. And so what happened is that I started calling her again and again and again. Usually we have these phone dates where we make it time and we're going to talk. We talk for like an hour, usually every week. We don't usually talk at other times. But what happened is that because I sensed that she was withdrawing, I started calling her. I'd get off of work and I'd call her and I'd be like, hey, just thinking of you. Or when we would talk on the phone, she also wasn't being very connecting and talking very much. And what did I do? I would talk. I'd tell her everything about what was going on in my life. I was asking her opinion all the time. And I respect Joan's opinion. I ask her opinion. But I was like, please, tell me, what do you think about this? What should I do about this? I was doing anything to try and get her to connect with me. Because to be honest, I was scared. I didn't want to lose my best friend. I didn't know if she was upset with me. I was like, what did I do? Was there something that upset me? We call each other the witness to each other's lives. Like, was I going to be losing the witness to my life? We'd be all alone. I was pretty scared. So this is one of those examples, right? She was withdrawing. What did I do? Over-anxious. And I thought I was being, like, kind and attentive, you know? Just thinking of you. But actually what was happening is I was getting all over-eager, over-anxious, and what did she do? Then she just withdrew more. And I can tell you it was the most painful time in our 30 years of friendship. So that is my example, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about it and later and tell you what happened further. But right now what we're going to do is, does anybody need paper and pencil to write with? Does anybody need, because we have journals and stuff in the back. Sir? Debbie will get you one. That's my partner. Sir. Okay, so I just want to repeat. So with this example, with this exercise, we are not trying to solve anything, fix anything, change it, figure it out. We're just trying to start to think about times, get a feel for times when we have experienced this type of communication pattern. Over-eager, over-anxious, exaggerated need, like withdrawal, even as Joanne said, repulsion. And it doesn't have to be something like big and deep. It could be like, oh, I went in the store today and the salesperson was really like, and then, you know, you went into repulsion or withdrawal, or maybe you spoke with someone and they were hardly saying anything, and so you were like, oh, blah, 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 I'm talking back. So this doesn't have to be a big, deep kind of thing, but we're actually going to give you 5 minutes. So you can really sort of feel yourself into it. What does that feel like? What does that happen? And it could be one example or it could be several examples. Just, again, to get a feel of it in your own experience. And you may not be able to think of anything. If you can't, that's okay too. You can ask your higher self for some help in sort of getting an idea about this. Does anybody not understand my question? Because if you don't, I'd be happy to try and explain it best.
So we're supposed to think of it, we're supposed to do the first bullet, or?
You're supposed to do either one, so all of these. So what you're supposed to do is think of a time, maybe a time when you were over-anxious and someone else was repulsed, or a time when someone else was withdrawing and over-anxious. And what were you feeling at the time?
Thank you, Billy. And we're going to give you 5 minutes, so really take your time.
Needs more time. So would one or two people be willing to share an awareness that they had of a time when they experienced over-eager withdrawal communication? Thanks, Kim.
I've noticed in general when people talk incessantly, I just find myself withdrawing. It's like they just need attention or something, you know, like chronically, you know, not one in particular, but I can think of actually my other, but she's like,
right, and you can even feel it in the way that you're talking about it, right? You're like, you can sometimes feel the grabbiness of it.
Right.
Yeah. Does anybody else have an example they would like to share?
I was in this workshop recently, and I was really anxious because I didn't know anybody there. And then we were supposed to do this exercise, similar to, you know, we were doing the exercise together. And so I was so nervous that I began asking incessant questions of the person. You know, like, just, I couldn't stop myself. And then when the person would answer, this person answered me, I can't, it was so hard. I would say, I do that too. I do that. I did everything that person did. I just didn't, I was that anxious.
Right. Right.
And pretty soon that person just stopped.
But I had to talk, something between me and my daughter was really bothering me, so I was very over-anxious. And when I talked to her about it, I didn't come across as all talkative. It was just, I was very hard in how I, you know, described the situation. I confronted her with a very blunt question. I'm sure my attitude seemed condemning, like, how could you treat your mother this way? I mean, I didn't say that, but I'm sure it was coming across. And her first reaction was she looked at me. We were on Skype. She looked at me like a deer caught in the headlights. And then she just gave me some very factual information and then just kind of withdrew.
Right. Right.
And I ended up feeling even more frustrated because I didn't get an answer. I felt rejected, I felt hurt, then I felt ashamed for talking to her that way. You know, I realized I was trying to, I went about it the whole wrong way.
Thanks for sharing that, because there are different ways that this exaggerated need comes out in communication. Okay. So now you sort of have an idea of how it works in you, and Joanne is going to continue on.
Yep. So this slide speaks about the idea of once you have found, acknowledged, and experienced the underlying need, you can try to determine how much urgency or craving is there. The idea that you have not much understanding that it's even there at all, never mind the degree of which. But what's interesting, God says, the stronger this is, the more likely you will not be aware of it. So that one was really threw me off, because I said to myself, you know, you would think the more extreme the reaction that you would then know this, but it's actually the opposite. So the idea here is that when you become a little more aware of yourself, you know, path work keeps wanting, you know, Eva's book back there is, you know, the path of the real self. You're trying to get this awareness of yourself. And so in doing so, you really don't have any other way to get a sense of your own well-being unless you come to that yourself. If ever there was a time when it points to the path work tools and the path work principles, did it go away?
Mm-hmm.
If there was ever a time that it pointed to the work we need to do, this is it. And, you know, what you can say to yourself is, if I see myself frequently not really feeling confident with not only the body language and the response the other person is giving me, it might start to be a clue that maybe doing a little inner work might not be a bad idea. We learn all about disharmonies. Those of you that have taken some of our workshops and things, you know that when you have an upset that seems disproportionate to what's going on right there, which we call an ER, or, you know, emotional reaction, I was going to say an emergency room. But you have an emotion, it could be an emotional, it could be an emergency room, but if you have a reaction to it, and that is usually a sign, something's under there, something else is going on there, this is not a straightforward thing. So those tools are really helpful to have. Self-search. This is where, this part of the lecture, where the guide brings in the idea of realizing that we have a bit of a dependency on others' view of us. Some of us have a lot more than others. Really are depending on, frankly, how the world reacts to us to get our own sense of well-being. So, in the sense of, it's really not a question of having a healthy mutuality. This is really kind of a one-sided childish demand that really, it's like your whole life is at stake. So when the other person is, so you know when you're in a relationship with someone and they are not responding the way you think they should be, which in some cases could be a lot, depending on how well one is getting along with this person, you understand that the heightened response does seem like life and death. So you can tell there's a childish reaction in there. This is a very young reaction. And remember, we're always still wanting this love, affection, connection, and attention. We really want this. So these unresolved conflicts that are out there in the world to the person you're communicating with, they have their own stuff too. So we're talking about the chances of communicating without this awareness is pretty nil. I mean, if you think of this group right now, if we all started talking, we have all our own material going on with each other. So not being aware of your own material will lead you down the path of not much connection, really, to much of anything or anyone. Guy brings in the concept of some of this inner work that we need to do coming from our images, our conflicts, and our distortions. You know, in path work, images are coming from that discussion that Judy gave us on the mask. It's what we want the world, who we want to look like to the world. How do I want to appear to the world? And if I'm kind of acting in a way where this person seems to be acting in a way that's not matching my image, oh my gosh, I'm having a fit. And not talk about rigid. I mean, the waves are flowing and probably bombarding this other person. So trying to understand this is the work of the path, to come to understanding our own misconceptions, our own false beliefs about ourselves, so that we can clean up some of this. I like this picture because exactly what it is, but I'm sorry. So your child's exaggerated craving has nothing to do with healthy love. Obviously, this has nothing to do with actual healthy love. And is actually the reason for the unhealthy impact and the subsequent rejection. So it makes very good sense that not reading your partner or not reading the other person, especially if you have a desire to communicate and connect with them, really, this guy probably didn't get the message. probably some aspects of it that he missed, you know. So, but you know clinging behavior. You know people that are clinging, and they need your approval over here in order to feel like they can live. They're just not quite capable of doing their life without that. And this poor fellow, he's in great shape. If you yourself have ever had what the guide says is the surge of energy coming at you, where somebody's trying to get your attention and you're not really digging it. Well, I mean, that is pretty soon they're going to continue doing that. And as that exercise hopefully pointed out, if you had an example of a time where someone did that to you, you know what that's like. You know what that's like. You want to run for the hills, and that withdrawal is going to happen. One other thing on that is that Denny's going to talk more about this before the exercise, but this over-eager communication is really about your exaggerated need. You've made up that you have a need way bigger than it is, but you don't want that. And it's obviously just counterbalanced by this withdrawal. And we almost all do that. I think Denny's story was a really good one to show how one way or the other, we're either doing this exaggerated communication, if you will, or anxious communication, and the other is withdrawing. This is a cyclic reaction. If you can let go of both extremes of the over-anxious, over-agitated, aggravated communication and the withdrawal, if you can get rid of both extremes, then your soul forces will begin to flow more harmoniously. And of course, that's in your favor. And of course, if you're still, even if the other person has some unresolved stuff, which likely will, it still will work because the law is there. As you give out, so must it be returned unto you. So it's about this balance. Can you imagine if both people actually had a clue about this and that people were actually not trying to grab and pull from the other person those things that they felt they needed, approval and so on. Do your work, use your path work, and learn where those cravings, and I think the word craving feels like the right word because it's almost like I have to have your approval, I have to have whatever it is outside of me. This quote from the lecture says really, if you get this, this will change your life. And then we really begin communicating, truly communicating. But what we really do most of the time is we subsist on this mutual dependency. I didn't want to bring in mutual dependency until I said, if two people are in need of making the other one feel important or approved of or loved in a way that is, it's not clean. Of course you want to be with someone to give them your approval or your kindness or, you know, say, you know, that you appreciate them or whatever. But it's when the thought process is distorted about it, like that I need it, I have to have it, it can't be done. That's when you know this is a dependency. And when the guide speaks about this mutual dependency, it's talking about the need to feel whole only if you react the way I need you to. Which, as of course, you know, cannot work. If we free ourselves from having a good mood or a bad mood or feeling happy or feeling sad or feeling smart or feeling really not smart, I hate to say don't, but if you see that you let the world basically define you when you allow that to happen. In this state, this dependency, I put the parentheses so that you knew what I meant, in this dependency state, one fulfills the need of the other in order to get his or her own need fulfilled. This is now the inner relationship of most human beings. Mm-hmm. So our world is like this, and it shows, I think. We have a lot of very poor communication between people. If you just look at your, if you are working in an organization or you're party to another organization and you see how much we miscommunicate to one another, you can even know what someone has in their head and watch them communicating. If you pay attention to this, which now I am, you can see how they're grabbing at each other and or running from each other, depending on the circumstance. And if you can see how quickly, if I could just bring this person to this attention to this, how much better, because the intention of this person wasn't that bad. It's just their view of themselves and what they needed to get out of that interaction. It's a bunch of unworked material, as Sue would say, this is largely what our world looks like, and we're governed by this dependency. I think the next slide is our goal. And that is this, okay, so take a second and really look at this. This healthy interdependency, which we're really striving to get, that we're both organized in a way that I don't need your approval, you don't need mine. I'd like it, it'd be good, but I don't have to have it. This healthy interdependency, however, can exist only if you are truly independent. So it makes sense then that you're not in need of someone else's view to be okay. And not the other person, but of your own distorted need and urgency, so that you're not so in need of this other person that you can't stand on your own two feet. Only on the basis of personal independence can you have healthy interdependence. Does that make sense?
Yes.
I think for the most part, as I read this, I said to myself, I have incident after incident after incident after incident. I'm almost wondering, how am I alive and what have I done? Because I don't know how I've gotten communicated in the world. I told Denny that I had a circumstance where a real estate person we were going in just to meet this real estate person. And it was a gentleman, and I happened to be with a gentleman from my company, coming together. And the real estate agent went right over to the guy with me and was just talking directly to him as if I wasn't there. Well, have you ever heard about the lead balloon? That's about like how it went over. So I was just trying to figure out, now what do I do now? Because I had a violent thing going on in my head. It was not good. My emanations had to be rather bad. I can only imagine. So I said to him something like, I don't know that we're interested in a real estate deal if you're not understanding. And I came at him rather strong. And, of course, he sat down. He looked like he'd been shot. I mean, it was not good after he realized that, you know, I was going to be a major part of this decision, and it wasn't like I was really invisible. So I could see after that what I did was I reacted to him in a way that probably there was a much more therapeutic way, but what really did I do? I went inside myself and thought, oh, man, I guess I am less than. I guess I am not the one we should talk to. Meanwhile, I had to make ultimately, it made no sense, my thought, but my thought went to that worst-case scenario that I had no sense of myself. I'm letting this guy tell me how I am, which... obviously, that ticked me off, but I could see how my emanations would have really put him in a place, and that really, really wasn't what I meant to do. I didn't need to put him in his place. So that's just an example. I do, I guess, sometimes need other approval, and that's a constant work I'm going to have to constantly do, that I need other people's approval to make me feel better. I need to be there a little better myself. Keep in mind that you constantly fluctuate between these extremes, of the over-eagerness coming from this exaggerated need and withdrawal. So I want to say that I think Denny has now, we're going to move into this concept that she actually put together, which I thought was a nice...
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, sure.
That last slide I was a little surprised by. So we're constantly either being overly like needy or extreme in our interaction with somebody or not.
Well, it's kind of what Denny's example gave us before, is that we're gonna continue to fluctuate in this way. You saw her say that Joan kind of retreated a little bit and she kind of came at her.
And then she came, she retreated more because now Denny was too much. So you see what I mean? It goes, it's going back and forth in a sense, and it fluctuates between the two. The guide is saying that this is not abnormal to have this happen. It's us catching it, us knowing what we're trying to get from the other person. So maybe if we go further, that still doesn't make sense. You're thinking maybe ask a better another question.
I can ask. It just seems like the guide is then saying that we're always either too overly needy or anxious in our communication with somebody.
Mm-hmm. If we're not understanding our own concepts of what we're wanting from the other person, I think that is effectively it.
So I think that the four on the slide, it said it's not
this one. Sure. Yeah.
What are you fluctuating between?
Okay, so this one, right. So this one. Let me see if I
can.
This one. Oh, thank you.
You can take it off. Thank you.
Okay, all right. Thank you, Billy. Okay, so this is the answer, as far as I understand it, is that when we, let's say, in the example with Joan, I was desperate, right? I was so afraid. I was going to lose her. I was going to lose the witness to my life. I was desperate. And so the way that I responded when she withdrew was not to say, like, oh, this is what's going on. I just went into overeager. If I didn't need that from Joan because I felt comfortable enough in myself to, which I'll give an example of, to talk about it in a different way, and I wasn't dependent on her, didn't feel like, oh no, the world's going to end, then you'll see, we would be able to have true communication. And
but
it would flow.
Like, how about the other 30 years of you guys? Like, it's almost like, you know, you're either overly needy or.
Right, so what the guide is saying is that most of the time in our lives, in our daily lives, actually, we are not, maybe not to that extreme, but the guide is saying this. Most of the time in our daily lives, we are not aware of the fact that we're trying to get something from someone. And when we are trying to get something from someone, whether it's respect, appreciation, submission, whatever it is that we're trying to get from them, we are actually, yes, indeed, in the cycle of overeager withdrawal, overeager withdrawal, overeager withdrawal.
And the other thing is the guide repeatedly says that this is unconscious. You are not going to get this here. You're going to get this only from knowing. So if you have a person that you've had a little words with, even if it's just a temporary time, from my understanding of this lecture, you're in a moment in time where you're going to either act one or the other. You're either going to be already annoyed with their aggression and you're going to withdraw. And it's going to go back and forth. But it's you're not aware, necessarily, of the emanations from your body or even how you're acting.
I'm just struck that it's that extreme,
yes.
Like, all the time.
Yes.
We're never, essentially, almost never kind of balanced with just being with somebody.
As long as we are dependent on someone else.
Yeah.
Right? So, and it could be as much as, like, what I was saying about, like, going to the store and the guy, that salesperson needs to make a sale. There's not mutuality happening there. Right. They need to sale. And so then we withdraw. And then, so it's not always big. It's like these little things. But yes, that's what the lecture says.
Wow.
Sorry, Jordan had his hand up.
Okay. If you go to the next slide. When I read it and I thought about it, it reminded me of things in my own life where if I was overeager and the other person backed away, I would have a response to them backing away. And I would say, so, you know, they're backing away from me. They don't like me. They don't, whatever is going on in my mind. And I would back away. And they might become like, oh, there goes Jordan. He's backing away from me. And they would try to get my attention again. And that was my interpretation of it, in that the two of us were involved in this cyclical behavior where I would be overly aggressive, I wasn't getting what I needed, I would walk back, they would sense my absence, they would become overly aggressive.
Right, yeah. That's exactly right.
Exactly. That's right. Thank you, Jody. Judy, did you want to say something?
Well, I also think there are times when you, as a person, don't care. But it will cause the person that you're interacting with to have some sort of response.
Right.
So then, you know, they'll either come after you or just walk away or whatever. But the dynamic is a lot there. Yeah,
it's a lot. And what it says is that it might be, for instance, that someone's like over-eager, over-anxious, and there's a healthy withdrawal, which is like, huh, this isn't working for me right now. It's not like, like that. So there might be withdrawal that is because the other person is like having their like reaction. They're also in reaction, or it could be like a healthy withdrawal. Or like what you're saying also, like you could have like a, I don't care about this. And truly, if you are just like in, like not in repulsion or in reaction or like that, then what it is actually saying is that then actually it will not cause this over this imbalanced. Then the emanations, it said earlier, the emanations will flow, and then even if the other person has unresolved stuff, the true communication will actually take place. So but if you're like, yeah, I don't really care, like more with an attitude kind of thing, then yes, it will also create. Because that thing that she was talking about with the balance.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, one other tiny thing about it, because you're going to do that thing next. The other thing about it that just went out of my brain, and it was about something about this, which right now I have no idea. My emanations are empty. Jordan.
I forget. Sue, did you say this to me about tug of war and the rope, not picking up the rope?
Could be.
It was probably Sue who said this to me, because I used to always pick up the rope. And you can only play tug of war if both people pick up the rope. And that's an unhealthy case.
Yeah.
Because then you're tugging back and forth and you're doing this. But a healthy case might be, you know, this is not something that I really want to engage in. And you don't pick up the rope.
Well, and you know, Ken, sometimes the other thing is that slide that has the guy with the healthy interdependence, where two people actually aren't trying to get anything from you. They're kind of, they're cool, they get this. So that actually can exist. I know no one, but it can exist. So it's a possibility. So, you know, it's just my comments. Anyway, any other questions?
I was just going to say, out of this, it seems to me it's describing what is very, very common. Kim was kind of, I kind of got the sense you were thinking, this is the only thing that happens in the world. And it seems, and it is very common, but it seems to me, and I'm no pathwork expert at all, but that if you take the clue to this is the unworked material.
Right. Yes.
Even if it's only one person on one side of it,
right,
or if it's both people.
Right.
But it's not so much the cyclical back and forth, it's that the unworked material, whatever it is causing an unrealistic situation, and so the situation is unreal. And you, if there is the option, possibility, I guess would be the word, of understanding when you do the work that you guys always talk about, then you come to a place where you have the possibility of a creative response.
Yes.
Rather
yes.
than a reaction.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yes.
That was really yes. good. Thank you.
So
you're not
I'm going to read off what Fritz said, because I'm going to now tell you what happened with Joan and I, which has to do with that. Okay, so what happened with Joan and I, just want to remind you, she and I, right, we were having this period of time, she was withdrawing, we weren't talking very much, when we did talk, it was pretty superficial. And if you remember correctly, I was turning to the over-eager, over-anxious communication, and she was withdrawn, right? And if you remember, I was pretty desperate. I was wanting something from her. And so what happened is this. Joan came to visit, and she came because she was going to a Pathwork workshop. And before she came, I had already thought about how I wanted to deal with the situation. I didn't want to keep in this pattern that we had. And I picked her up at the airport, and she got in the car, and it was pretty obvious that she was still feeling the way that she was feeling. And I had decided that I was going to let her know about what was going on, that I wanted to let her know that I was, how much her friendship meant to me, how much our friendship meant. I wanted to let her know about my fears. And I also wanted to let her know that I was willing to hear anything that she had to say to tell me about what was going on with her and the withdrawal that I was experiencing with her. But I wanted to hear anything she had to say to me, and I knew that that was true. And so what happened is she said something that actually surprised me in the moment, but later it didn't surprise me so much. But she said that she had felt that when her father died, that I hadn't been there for her. And she felt that I wasn't there at the time when he died, and that also afterwards, during the period thereafter, I hadn't been there for her. And so she was feeling like she was having a hard time trusting me. And I felt terribly, and I took that in, and I really felt it, and I apologized. And we talked about it, and it did get better, but there was still a lot of hesitancy, and I could feel that even though we were both making an effort, that there was something between us. So the weekend passed, and we were talking more, but it was still something going on. And so I decided that I really wanted to look and see, like, what was happening for me that I wasn't there for Joan, because her dad had died. And what I realized is that when her dad died, I was actually jealous of her. My mom had died about 3 months before that, and although I loved my mother, and I felt very sad when she died, and it was a very difficult time, I didn't feel what Joan felt when her father died. When her father died, she felt desperate. She was devastated. Her father had been the person that she respected most in the world. She's one of 11 children, and she said, told me that she thought that the heart of her family had been ripped out. And when my mom died, I didn't feel that way. I did not feel devastated. When my sister died, I felt devastated, but not when my mom died. So I realized that I had been jealous of her, and that even though I thought I was empathizing with her and feeling for her, what was really going on, I knew. I was judging her inside. I was telling myself, like, her feelings were exaggerated. I told myself she over-idealized her father. That is, it's true.
Yeah.
I know. And I realized that I was totally minimizing her experience at that time. So even though covertly, overtly, I thought I was communicating empathy and kindness, she was feeling my soul forces. She was feeling the judgment. So I called her and I said, Joan, I figured something out. And I let her know, and it was so tender. She really heard me, and she appreciated that I was honest with her. And I could truly feel the remorse, the deep remorse that I felt about it. And also, I let myself off the hook then, because I knew before that that there was something going on about the way I had responded to her. So she appreciated my honesty. I could come out of the closet and be normal with her again. And our friendship deepened since that time. And we already had a really deep friendship. But now it is better than it has ever been. And when we have a time where there's like one of us is unsure about the other, we just ask each other, hey, I had this sense,
something going on, and then we also really check in with ourselves. Was there something that happened that I might be doing that? It's totally different. And I would say our soul forces are flowing, and we really feel it. So that was an example of, right, withdrawal, overeager withdrawal, and then we often talk in pathwork about revealing. So we do our work, we connect with ourselves, and then we reveal to another about ourselves. We risk telling about ourselves, even about our lower self stuff. And this is what the guy was talking about then. True communication can take place. The soul forces are flowing. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. So I'm going to do a brief overview just to recapture things, and then we are going to do an exercise.
Is this me? Okay. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry, I just said you're a recent
time. I'm a recent time,
yes.
That's right. That's why we have to have the overview. Okay, so communication was the thing that we ended up that we're talking about. And the first thing we talked about was that we have these soul centers, and that the forces, these forces flow between us. We emanate them, and then they are received by another. And that even when we think that we're communicating one thing, kindness, appreciation, empathy, if there's something else going on inside of ourselves, if we have an exaggerated need, those soul forces, they're not flowing, and true communication is not taking place. And true communication, right, communication is one of the stages to unity, and so we are blocking the path, delaying the path that guides us to unity. So when we have dependent relationships, that's what Joanne was talking about, when we have a need, we are depending on you to give me what I want, then what happens is that that's when the soul forces become jagged and distorted and twisted. Our communication reflects this, how, and we develop this pattern, right? We've been talking about overeager, exaggerated need, withdrawal, and repulsion. When our relationships are based in healthy independence, this is not like, I don't need you. This is like, I know I can get what I need from myself, and I want to be connected with you. So this is healthy interdependence. It's still giving and receiving, but without the craving, without the grabbing. So healthy interdependence is when our relationships are based in healthy independence, and we can create healthy interdependence. And it is from that that we are able to experience true communication. Got it? Okay, so we are going to pass out. Oh, you did.
I did.
You can't see it. You can't see it.
Be a seasoned psychotherapist. It was really quite fun.
What do you want us to do?
We're just taking one.
You may need to share.
You have another one.
You may need to share.
Same questions. This is going to be an exercise for them.
So we're sharing it.
Well,
yeah. I think I'm a slide, so.
Oh. And so I actually am going to do one of those. Someone share with me. Does everybody have a paper? Oh, does everybody have a paper near you? Okay. So, you can either write on the back of the paper, or you can write in your journals.
And what I'd ask you to do is just, even though you have all the questions, just wait so we can each do each of the stages together. So the first thing that we're going to do is we are going to write about, I'm going to ask you to think of a time when you felt a strong, intense, exaggerated need to get something from another. Could be attention, love, reassurance of connection, respect, it could, or something else. It could be have been in the recently or in the past, and allow yourself to think back to it, to feel back into it, to feel the energy of what was happening. And just write about the experience. Tell the story. So right now we're not talking about anything but just like what happened, like, oh, Joan was withdrawing, I was calling her all the time. So just telling the story. And we're just gonna take a few minutes to do that. And did that make sense? I know sometimes if we give instruction and it's not clear, just let me know, okay? Needs more time. Would you give it another 30 seconds or so?
Is this just for number one? Or for
this is just for number one. Just
we're
for
good.
Number one.
We got it.
You're good? Okay.
Yeah, feels good.
Feels good.
You're almost good.
I'm almost good.
Good enough.
So what were you trying to get from the other person? What were your exaggerated needs? What did you feel at the time it was happening? And what were you afraid might happen or that you would have to feel if you didn't get the need fulfilled by the other? Like, my need was to get Joan to stay connected with me and to stay my best friend, right? I needed her to do that. I thought I would be devastated. I thought that, like, I thought I would be, like, alone in the world without her. So what was your exaggerated need? What were you afraid might happen or you would have to feel if you didn't get that need fulfilled?
Are you asking us to write or to raise our
hands?
No, to write about. To write about.
Oh,
thank you, Carol.
Thank you.
So the next question that the guide asks in the lecture is, what measures have you resorted to try to get your exaggerated need fulfilled? So the guide says, what measures did you resort to? Like in my situation with Joan, obviously at overeager communication, I was trying to manipulate her also, right? I was like, give me your opinion, like I'm thinking of you. I was trying to manipulate her. Submission, sometimes we use submission to try and get what we want. Aggression, depending on who we are. Withdrawal, sometimes we actually actively try and withdraw even if someone's not overeager because that's what we're, you know, the way we're trying to get what we want. What measures did you resort to and really try and mine inside of yourself? Like, what was it that I was trying to do? There might be several. I've had most of these. So the last question is about true communication. Can you imagine a different kind of communication than what took place at the time? What would you have communicated with the person if you had not felt dependent on getting your exaggerated need met? What might you have revealed to the other about yourself that would have led to understanding? So just trying to take a moment to really think, like, what would I have wanted to communicate to that person if I didn't feel dependent on them giving me this certain thing that I wanted from them?
We go down to her house in D.C. and we spend a week together, only talking at dinner. And just lots of deep work goes because someone else is in the house doing the same thing. And then you have communion and we drive back and forth to D.C. together. And since I've moved here and she was no longer coming here to teach, that was absent, and I was really, really, really missing it. So I started sending out these exaggerated communications about it would be really great, and, you know, and could we meet halfway, because she's 6 hours away now. Nothing worked, and I didn't get any answer back from her at all. Once she said, I guess that'd be nice. I don't know. I have nothing. And I finally did it again recently, and she didn't answer me. I gave her some ideas, and she didn't answer me. So I began to mourn. Everybody that I know here, except for some dance friends who are not the kind that go on individual retreats or solitary silent retreats that I know of, are Pathwork people, and I have a complicated relationship of various sorts with Pathwork people. So I had to mourn, and I thought how sad I was about losing that. I didn't know how I'd replace it. It was deeply, deeply, deeply nourishing. Deep guidance came, and she's someone I feel very safe with. So, and after I mourned and let it go, about a month later, she writes me an email saying, how about doing a silent retreat? I'll come to Pittsburgh. There's other things I could do in Pittsburgh. I'd be happy. I said, do you want to meet someone? No, I'm happy to come to Pittsburgh. And I guess I let go of the forcing current. I felt the feelings about mourning what I couldn't have and didn't see being able to create here. I didn't know how that was going to happen. And then she came. Oh, and then apparently I didn't answer her right away. Oh. I said, I gave you 3 days.
Thank you, Carolyn. I am going to leave it at that.
Yes.
Thanks, Carolyn. Before Sue comes back to end tonight, does anybody have any questions or anything else that they feel would be important to bring into the room before we finish? Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm Joanne and Denny. Good job. Let's give them one more hand. You guys have no idea how many hours these teachers spend working and praying and working together and going over their lectures. It's a huge investment and a huge contribution. So thank you so much, all of you. Let me see what I'm going to use here with the little, oh, thank you. Time that we have left. Excuse me. So, it's easy to get discouraged working on the path because we come to see so much about the negativity in us, and it seems like we have to work so long and so hard to get conscious and to root out the negativity that we uncover and see in ourselves. So the consolation and the reassurance that I wanted to give you is that the guide, the lectures, teaches us that we don't have to entirely get rid of the negativity. It's like Joanne and Denny were saying, please excuse me, that what we have to do is to own them, see them, take responsibility for them, and that then reduces their power and reduces their sting So it's not like we have to get rid of all of this stuff. We just have to be able to see it and really own it. You remember I was telling the story about Dr. Chioda in the beginning. The most inspiring thing she said was that she had worked long enough and hard enough confronting her stuff, meditating, I am sure, many times a day. And I can tell you, I know this woman was in truth. She said, I no longer have that negative voice. I no longer have the negative voice. And to be with her, you knew that was true. Right, Julie? She no longer has it. So to me, that's inspiring. We'll keep doing the work and doing the work and doing the work. And maybe someday we won't have that negative voice. So Kiara, are you here?
Where is she?
Kiara sent me this beautiful, beautiful song. She said, this song reminded me of you, reminded me of us, and our theme on From Division to Inclusion this year. So we're going to end with a video and a song that is a meditation. So, you know, take a few deep breaths, get your feet on the floor, drop your shoulders, open your chest so that you can drink it in and fill ourselves as we close the evening. A couple of people have said to me, like, what is it that's available for us to do beyond doing First Wednesdays and occasional workshops? Like, how do we do the training that all these teachers are doing, etc.? So we are getting ready to firm up plans that a year from this fall, 2020, we're going to start another 2.5-year transformation program. So many of you have let us know that you're interested. New people who are coming in, we want you to start planning, saving your money, arranging your calendar. That's where all of our people who are now teaching and becoming helpers started, is in the transformation program. So we'll be talking about it probably every month, but just know, 2020, Jordan, end of fall, Jordan has asked and asked, we're starting a transformation program in Pittsburgh, so.
You have it?
Yep.
Okay.
Okay. We've surpassed my technology. I have no idea. How do you like it? Great. Well, I'm gonna just tell you that we are near not gonna be able to roll with it. I don't have an idea. So sorry. I think there's a
can you sing
activity. Oh, I could sing it.
Is your phone synced up with the
both
with that? Just
I can maybe take off the video part and maybe
I feel like
do it this way.
Yeah.
Let me try that one more time.
The phone's probably more important.
Very. Well, it's supposed to be synced.
It's okay. We'll play next month. Don't worry about it.
We'll play it next time.
Don't worry about it. We flow with what is. So one other wonderful member of our community, Julie Trappel, who is on our board and in our transformation program, sent me this beautiful prayer
that I can
believe there is good in the world, be the good.
Be the good in the world.
I didn't like working with me,
Sarah. I love that Joanne is practicing imperfection. I love it. Let's give her a hand. As I was talking earlier about, you know, how hard it is, struggling on the path, finding our negativity, teasing it out, connecting with that divinity that's within us. And this is a beautiful poem that Julie sent that I'd like to share with you for the closing tonight by Thomas Merton. My Lord God, I have no idea where I'm going. I do not see the road ahead of me. I cannot know for certain where it will end. Nor do I really know myself. And the fact that I think I am following your will does not mean that I actually am doing so. But I believe that my desire to please you, to please the love, the divinity that's within me, that does in fact please you. And I hope I have that desire in all that I am doing. I hope that I will never do anything apart from that desire, or a should, or an ought, or a must, but that I do it from desire. And I know that if I do this, you will lead me by the right road, though I may know nothing about it. Therefore, I will trust you always, though I may seem to be lost in the shadow of death. I will not fear, for you and your divinity are ever with me, and you will never leave me to face my perils alone. Amen. Thomas Merton. Thank you for being here. Good night. See you next month.